another record high on Wall Street. The S&P 500 touches a new milestone today, and it doesn't look like it's going to be ending anytime soon. Our guest today is actually saying it's going to even go higher. The good times are here. He is predicting some major numbers, although there could be one thing that could derail this rally, and we'll get into it. Welcome, everyone, to Buy, Hold, Sell. I am your trader, Todd Schoenberger, and I am joined by my friend and co-host, Tobin Smith, out in sunny and hot Scottsdale, Arizona.
It's raining and cold. Do you have the Weather Channel?
You know what? I look at my Yahoo app, and I look at it, and I see it, and I know what you're going through, but yeah. I just have to throw it out there anyway, because I know I'm going to get a good rebuttal.
I got the vest on for crying out loud. That cold.
There you go. Ahead. You look sharp. Thank you. With us today, Jay Hatfield. He is the CEO of Infrastructure Capital Advisors and CIO of the ICAP and SCAP ETFs. And we're going to get into those later on. Jay, welcome to the program.
Todd and Tobin, it's great to be on. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. I will interject that I have interviewed Jay over the years many, many times. And he's not opinionated at all. So I don't really know why we have him on the show. But ask him about the ECB, would you, Todd?
We're going to talk about ECB. We're going to talk about AI. We're going to talk about all kinds of letters that are out there. But I got to start with the number right now, Jay. I looked at your pre-interview notes, and I will say I think you have the highest forecast on Wall Street right now for the S&P 500. I'm not going to give away the number. I'm going to allow you to do that for the audience. But I need to ask, how do we get there?
Okay, so we, just for a little bit of context, last year we had a 4,500 target. And most of the year we acknowledged the risks were to the upside, partly because of AI. And the basis for that view was to try to simplify things. So we're a monetary economist, so we do focus on the money supply. Don't ignore Keynesianism. But if you just follow the Fed, you will be a great investor. So our thesis was, the Fed would pause, and that would be a huge catalyst for the market, and we got to our target. So the reason I mentioned that, this year is going to be exactly the same. And everybody, strategists aren't on top of it, but a lot of investors are. So yeah. Maybe the Fed goes in July. Maybe they go in later in the year, August, I guess. But it's not going to matter. Once they start cutting, and the ECB essentially this morning said they're cutting in June.
European Central Bank, for those of you who don't speak monetary.
European Central Bank. And they are as important as the Fed. You know, the Eurozone's roughly the same size as the United States. And so that's the critical catalyst. Everybody's most of Wall Street's too conservative. And this AI boom is for real. So it's those two pillars. But there's one point, and you can see this on our website. We have the global monetary base. If you just simply invest and get fully invested when central banks are cutting rates, you're going to make money, because what almost no one appreciates is that you can't just cut rates by fiat. Central banks need to inject liquidity into the banking system to lower these overnight lending rates. And that liquidity then flows into the capital markets. So it's sort of like you own the stock and Warren Buffett is buying it. But instead of being one stock, it's all stocks and all bonds. And if you look back and you just followed that global monetary base and bought and sold based on it, you would be trading perfectly, because you would have been long 2020, end of 2020, 21. You would have been out of the market in 22. You would have got long in 23 as it started to increase. And now that's going to accelerate. So that's our key indicator. You can access that on our website, www.infracapfunds.com. It's the global monetary base, and you can only find it on our website.
Yeah,
Hold on, Toby, real quick. Yeah. And on there, on infracapfunds.com, I looked and you actually posted the number. What is your target for the S&P 500?
Oh, yeah. So 57. So we started out at 5,500 at the beginning of the year. So it's not like we just had this epiphany and we were bearish before. But we just realized that this market doesn't want to go down. This AI boom's for real. The ECB is definitely going to cut, because the data has been terrible since the beginning of the year for the Eurozone. And so we raised it to 57.50, but we acknowledge the risk is to the upside.
So yeah, I mean, 12%, I guess, from the current levels. Yeah. Go ahead, Toby.
I mean, first off, sometimes, you know, the simplest explanation, when a central bank pushes cash into the marketplace, then it makes interest rates go down. When they take cash out of the system, it's supply and demand. And what what our big boy here is saying is that there's a lot of ways they're pushing cash in, even right now, and interest rates are right at this precipice, and right at the margin is where the interest rates start to come down. And then, you know, you get the animal spirits and people, you know, you'll start to see, I mean, first off, Bitcoin has already, you know, essentially suggested all of this. We're long Ethereum. I just looked at my Ethereum today. I mean, I might be able to buy another house tomorrow. I mean,
isn't that partly because of the ETFs, though?
Well, Ethereum's not an ETF. They think they're going to have one. They probably will. No, okay. it's that there's a significant amount of human beings that have sort of put something together and have a philosophy, which is if they're going to push a bunch of stuff of cash in, then I'm going to take risk. And where I'm going to take risks is in sort of risky assets. And that's Ethereum, but that's Bitcoin. But the bigger point here is that what's the odds? Again, I can't remember. How many times has the market gone up when the Fed got this, you know, stimulative? You said it was like 5 out of 5 times or 10 out of 10 times, Jay?
Yeah, I mean, it's nearly 100%. I mean, you know, just the only qualification is there haven't been that many periods. It used to be that the monetary base was stable.
Yeah.
Really, since the financial crisis, that they started treating it like we were a third world country. But just one little nuance to demonstrate our point. You might say, well, why do you care about the global monetary base? We were very surprised by the run-up in rates to 5% during October, during really the summer and into the fall last year. So we started to do work and said, well, what the heck is happening here? And we discovered that the ECB, to raise rates, remember, they were raising rates after our Fed. They needed to suck in 1 week $700 billion of excess liquidity out of their banking system, you know, because they had a lot of overnight repo facilities and they couldn't get the rate higher. So they sucked that all out at the end of June, and that marked the beginning of the global bond sell-off. And so that's what we thought happened. We made a bullish call on rates October 31st when they were at 5%. Because everybody else was freaking out about the budget deficit and all these other onshoring and other random theories. But they didn't, nobody looks at the money supply. I don't fully understand it. I learned it as an undergrad 45 short years ago. So I've continued to study it, studied it at Wharton. So we're focused on it, but believe me, very few people are. But if you watch that, you're going to get all these pre-indicators of these booms and busts.
Yeah. Yeah. Nobody's talking about M2, that's for sure. Yeah. I completely understand. So, Jay, you have one eye on the ECB. You're talking about the Fed, potential rate cuts in July. But what's the reason for cutting? I mean, there really is no, right now, you have an economy, you have a 2% GDP target. Why would the Fed actually need to cut at this point?
Well, therein, that is a little bit of the bear case. But we do think the ECB, conversely, has no choice. Germany's already in a recession. Yep. They printed a negative 11% January factory orders number, and that's down 6% year over year. They are in a flat-out recession. And Europe has one and only one strategic advantage over the U.S., and that is they can properly calculate inflation. So we, because they're a relatively new organization, they developed these methods over the last 20 years. We use methodology that's 50 years old. It was created really to make inflation look lower after the 70s.
Yeah,
so all these Byzantine methods, archaic, ridiculous methods to calculate shelter costs. We also have a similarly flawed way of calculating financial services inflation. So financial service inflation last 1 month was 60% annualized. Why? Because my fees didn't go up 60.
Mine didn't either, but the assets went up.
Yeah, the assets went up. So that's called inflation. So that's just flat out ridiculous. Oh. But unfortunately, we have a very flawed Fed that has a rigid policy framework that the PCE, regardless of how badly it's calculated, needs to go towards 2%. But our data, notwithstanding the terrible shelter numbers, the AUM thing is going to attenuate. So we're forecasting a very slow roll down to 2.5 by the end of June, which would set us up for late July, you know, it's July 31st cut. Oh. But That's not a certainty. And we do believe that next week will be a negative inflection for the market. Just like today, the ECB was a positive inflection for both the global bond market and stock markets. All bonds rallied. There was a widespread rally across the globe. But we think there will be some disappointment because the SEP or dot plot's going to come out. And to your point, a lot of Fed governors are like, oh, economy's strong, and we're just going to stick this myopically to this 2% target. So we're not in a rush. And for some reason, the market doesn't want to listen. Like Bostic already said this, Powell implied it. So that could set us up for a mild disappointment, but I wouldn't like sell ahead of it because I'm sure Nvidia will be up that day and the market will be flat or it'll go down that day and then a rally back just like it did yesterday after the last 2 days. We wouldn't
Yeah,
fade
Jay, I think
early,
that
but just be aware of
your macro work has always been fantastic. At the micro level, though, there's this little thing called politics going on, and I was sort of shocked to see how many basically. And again, we don't talk politics. I'm sorry, I'm just talking about politics that affect my wallet. Is the tax raises, the corporate tax raises that. You know, the quote unquote, I don't know what you call them anymore, Democrats, but they don't sound Democratic to me. The tax raises, corporate tax raises, you've got some data, I've got some data. When you raise corporate taxes, in every case, you slow the economy. And, a first grader can know that. You don't have to go to Wharton to figure that out. So how do you read the tea leaves here?
Well, there's one other. So everywhere but in the United States, what you just said is accepted fact. It's not a political conversation. It's just a fact.
Right, it's math.
So this is Scandinavia has 20% average corporate tax rates. There's some lower. The only countries that are higher are like the Congo or some horrible country that's in the 30s. Okay,
Even in
so.
my native Ireland, we only have a 12.5% rate. And guess what? We're crushing those bastards.
So this is not even controversial, but there's one other nuance, and the reason why this would be an unmitigated disaster for the stock market is that it affects economic growth, definitely, but it also affects corporate earnings growth,
Yeah.
which is the key driver of the multiple. And the reason for that is that most people don't appreciate this, but we're probably going to talk about MLPs. They're a good example. If you don't retain earnings and reinvest in your business, it goes to heck in a fa in a rapid basis. So, like a lot of strategists, like most strategists are pretty bad, I would argue. And they'll come on and say, well, I don't have a low target on the S&P because I don't believe the 10% earnings growth. But I have 2 points about that. First of all, it's pretty much baked into the cake. If you retain 70% of your earnings and invest it at a 15% after-tax rate, you grow at 10. But
That's
so
good.
then, if you raise corporate taxes to 30, then you don't grow, you don't get 15, you get 12. The growth rate of earnings is lower, the multiple's lower, and we're all losing 20% of our portfolios.
Yeah, or if you're a consumer-facing company and your tax rate goes up, well, guess what? You're going to raise your prices. You're
Right,
going
there's
to
some
raise your
cost
prices as
push through as
much as you
well.
can.
But most people understand that dynamic. And I would, if you take one thing away from this podcast, that is that earnings growth is more or less baked into good companies that retain earnings, trade at reasonable multiples. And that's why the deck, the odds are in your favor. It's like going to casino, but you're the casino. And so if you hold stocks over long periods of time, then it will be profitable, but should avoid money losing companies. And you don't want to be in high tax jurisdictions because your earnings growth is going to be way lower, high
Okay. Yeah.
corporate tax jurisdiction.
Yeah. Like, why is it that 15 multi-billion dollar companies have moved out of California in the last 36 months, and or in the retail side where the average hourly wage is $20 an hour, which I can understand. I grew up in Southern California. You grew up in Northern California. I mean, it's an expensive place to live, but now people can vote with their feet. Now companies can vote with their feet. So I'm with
And they
you
have,
in that way.
Ireland's the best example of that. They have
Yes,
one
it
of
is.
the highest GDP growth rates and the lowest corporate tax rate. And they are going to defend that corporate tax rate to the death because it's in Ireland, it's not even an issue. It's just obvious. They have all these international companies. generating all this tax revenue, hiring people. I mean, somewhat small because they're more like shell companies, and they mint money off of it. So why would you ever consider raising the rate from what is basically the average of the OECD?
Yeah, right. There's no question. And, you know, again, politics do affect investing. I mean, we certainly know that, you know, when we had these big rate changes, when we had, you know, interest rates cut, or when we spent $8 trillion and only brought in $6.5 trillion in revenue and had to issue more bonds, that also affects stocks because, you know, those are bond rates. So, I'm with you. Todd, sorry, we got a little into the weeds, but...
No apologies necessary. This is great. I know the audience is getting a lot out of it as well. So this is fantastic. But we are going to leave it on that, on this block, guys, because coming up after the break, we're going to talk to Jay about where to place some money right now. There's got to be some hot areas other than AI. I'm sure there's a few that he'd like to get into. So we're going to talk all about it. So with us today, we have Jay Hatfield. He is the CEO of Infrastructure Capital Advisors and CIO of the ICAP. I'm sorry, was it ICAP and the SCAP and the CCAP? We got all kinds of caps. We're going to talk about that after the break as well.
All kinds of caps.
There we go, because we got to get into it. So please stick with us. We'll be right back.
Buy, hold, sell, brought to you by CrossCheck Management.
Get ready for a revolution in business podcasting with the Weekly Money Clip. This game-changing podcast is brought to you by CrossCheck Media and CenterClip, and it's set to redefine how you think about money. Featuring a countdown of top business audio segments, each episode is packed with authentic and original commentary from over 50 independent contributors. Join us for a comprehensive exploration of money-related topics where expert insights meet individual experiences in a 30-minute powerhouse of financial wisdom. Available on the Evergreen Podcast Network and all popular podcast platforms, the Weekly Money Clip is easily accessible to anyone interested in business and finance discussion. Don't miss out on this fusion of creativity, expertise, and innovation. Subscribe now and be part of the financial revolution with the Weekly Money Clip. Your financial future starts here.
This is Barbara Duran from BD8 Capital Partners, and you are listening to Todd and Toby on Buy, Hold, Sell.
It's another broken record on Wall Street. The S&P 500 hits a new high, a fresh high. It seems that there's an argument to be made, Toby, that since buy, hold, sell hit the market 2 years ago, the stock market's just been going up. It's been
exactly
going north,
right?
Because of the show. Gotta be because of us.
You know, I was just going to make that point. It's 100% correlated.
Absolutely. You
know, I don't know. I don't know how to respond to that. But hey, I wanted to tell a quick story about Jay.
Well, I want to tell. Well, we do have Jay Hatfield with us, and he's from Infrastructure Capital Advisors. And Toby, I know you have some history there with Jay. You've interviewed him a bunch of times on your own show. Yeah. Tell the audience. You told me is this great story. I know the audience would really like to hear it. Go with it.
Well, one of the things about Jay that I really admire is he's a realist. He doesn't live in some fairy, fairy, hairy land. You know, he actually looks at stuff. Well, when we got into the pandemic thing, the research group that we have said that it was coming. I got calls from Micron people in China. So we went cash and we went short the market. We do short energy and we shorted, you know, all sorts of stuff. But one thing I never realized was in these master limited partnerships, which Jay has this amazing ETF, they're mostly owned by retail investors. They can't even be owned by most endowments, et cetera, because it has a K-1. They can't own that, literally. So anyway, AMSA went from like $16 down to $6 in about an eyelash. Yet nothing had changed. The MLPs all get paid no matter what. I mean, I love the ones with the compressor MLPs. The USAC was another one we got, where they never missed a bill, never been not paid in 25 years. And all of a sudden, you know, it was horrible. So I had met a guy who works with Jay, And we looked at it and we said, oh my gosh. So anyway, we loaded up all our subscribers. It's like 2,500, 3,000 subscribers. And we bought Amazon, including yours truly. And I believe I just looked at my cost basis before the dividends, and it's $6.25. And what did it close at today, Jay? I can't remember.
It's right around, it's hovering around $40 a share.
Oh,
well, it's not only that, but it also pays about a $2.10 dividend per year. Am I exaggerating on that?
Actually, we raised it, and I should have this memorized, but I can look it up on my Bloomberg.
It's $3.10.
Yeah, so it's 26 cents a month. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what's the name of this thing?
So it's called AMZA, A-M-Z-A, and the official name is what? AMZA.
The InfraCap MLP ETF Fund.
Yeah, that's why we call it AMZA, because it's a lot easier. Jay's really good at buying stocks. He's not that great at naming ETFs. It's all
well, common. I actually had to look at my Bloomberg to remember it. So it's pretty
yeah, funny. I know. Thank you. I was going to call makes a shit ton of money, but yeah, that was already taken. So, but the point is that, so, I mean, you know, these are life-changing events. And when you're the most scared, particularly when something that's a one-time or once every 100-year event, man, you got to be greedy. We had this conference call with the subscribers, and a guy talked about how he bought 10,000 shares he's now got all of his original capital back just on the dividend and more. But he's put two kids through college and one to that, you know, that Stanford place you went to, pal. And then a little more into little Columbia. And he still has $250,000 of that left. Well, the moral of that story is, man, first off, know your stuff. Number two, when everybody's scared to death, particularly on a one-time event, start looking. And MLPs, Master Limited Partnerships, are probably the most misunderstood entity out there, unless you're in the energy business. But all we really knew is I called the CFO and I said, tell me what's going on, particularly USAC, USA Compressors. Tell me what's going on here. He says, well, have you ever had anybody default on your pipeline or on a compressor? I talked to the energy transfer people. I said, we've never had anybody ever default. I said, what do you mean never, ever? I mean, never, ever. They have to pay their bill, or their oil or their gas or their propane doesn't get to where it's going. And so then they really have problems, number one. Yeah. And then number two, it's the first bill they'll pay. They'll defer a lot of other stuff, but they're always going to pay that because if they get foreclosed or taken out of the system, they won't get back. So he was very, very smart, and he helped. I just want you to know you helped a lot of people change their lives by being able to be cool, calm, collected when we started talking about AMZA and USA Compressors, et cetera, at the time, because you were an investment banker in that field. I mean, you know the business.
He that's also great. co-founded an MLP as well. So I know.
Right.
Well, let's go into that. I'm going to segue into this because you have this SCAP ETF. Jay, I got to ask you, tell the audience about it, because if you had that kind of success working with Toby, I can't imagine what the SCAP ETF is going to be like.
So we have five ETFs and they all pay monthly dividends that are substantial, kind of 6 to 9%. And we're particularly excited about SCAP because what normally happens in a cycle happened this cycle. Not as dramatic as the pandemic, but everybody knows over the last couple of years, since the Fed started tightening, everybody wants the mega cap stocks, mostly tech stocks, but larger caps have done better, way better than small caps. And there's a valuation gap that's opened up of about 8 multiple points. So at least money-making small caps are trading at about 14 times. And the, you know, the S&P is close, you know, is over 20. So we think it's a little bit like AMZA, not as dramatic, but one of those opportunities, if you put money to work in the small cap sector, you're going to make money. But with just one caveat, if you look at the Russell 2000, about 20% of the companies make no money and another 30 pay no dividends. Uh-huh. So we curated using those criteria, but also we don't like to overpay for growth. So we look for reasonable multiples relative to growth. And that's super easy in small caps because they're so hammered down. So our average P is right around 15. And the growth rates are usually 10, close to 10 to 15. So like a 1x growth versus 2 for the S&P, the large caps. Okay. So, and if you look at that fund, we launched it last year. it's already beaten the small cap value index by a lot. Not necessary. We do a lot of work, and we, are good at accounting and projecting and talking to company. We're good analysts, but it's not because we're geniuses. We're just picking the best companies that are reasonable multiples, pay dividends, low leverage, and they are beating earnings and they're going up, it's a little bit like MLPs. If they're down, they're not out. If you buy a money losing biotech, don't develop the drug, it goes to zero, then that's just a loss. You buy a good stable company with low leverage, reasonable multiple, goes down, then you just hold it longer and you're going to get your money back. Yeah. So we do think small caps are a good opportunity in this market if we're right about it being a bull market where rates come down because of global rate cuts.
Yeah, and I would say we used SMHB a lot, which again serves as your thing wasn't around at that time. They throw a little leverage into that. That fund is, I was just going over a client's fund yesterday. We usually try to, balance things out, but we put our heavy into it, when the world was going to hell in a handbasket, and it's now like 24% of her portfolio. So I'm a bad person. However, the thing's up 158% for a small cap fund. I mean, it's, and on the dividends, right? So right. I'm totally agree with you that when we now can have see the visions of actual interest rates coming down, then I do want to, own these companies that do better. Then I do want to buy some of these companies that have been blown up. Forget about office REITs. That's a sort of a whole different animal. But even there's some office REITs that lease to just AAA companies that have been thrown the baby in the bathwater, right?
Yeah.
And then preferred. Tell us about your preferred, because I've always liked PFFA when interest rates starts coming down.
Well, yeah. So, and actually PFFA was a lot like AMSA. We did get a lot of people into it during the pandemic. The baby got thrown out with the bathwater. But the thing about preferreds, it's a little bit complicated. So I won't get into all the nuances, but
thank God.
It's a similar situation, very simple way to trade them. And that is, if they're well below par, right now they're about 15% below par. So PFFA is our largest fund. It's beaten every other, has a better track return profile than any other preferred stock fund, closed end, open end, and ETFs. And the reason for that is, well, we can do it and you do it. So when preferreds go above 25, if you own an individual one, you sell it. But also right. With our fund, our average price is right around 21. So if you buy it now, chances are when everything normalizes, which it eventually does, then it's going to go up to 25. Now, it's not going to be like MLPs where it goes up, whatever that is, like 1,000%. But, but you get equity-like returns with fixed income risk. We've never had a default. Default rates on preferreds are very low, like investment-grade bonds, 0.3. So we do think that's also an opportunity, not as discounted during the pandemic, but discounted when rates are coming down. Those are going to go back to par over the next couple of years. So good to great total return opportunity. Yields
yeah,
over.
And I just add in, Jay, is that, if you're a self-directed investor and you're running your own show, I've been dealing with self-directed investors for 40 years. And first off, they really don't know what a preferred stock is. They really, really don't understand the inverse correlation between as interest rates go down, bond prices go up. And they certainly don't understand that every preferred is issued at $25. So if I can buy a $25 preferred that Jay Hatfield says is a strong deal, and I can buy it at 21 bucks, you guys put a little leverage in there too, don't you?
Yeah, we have very low leverage compared to closed-end funds.
Yeah.
So we run 20 to 25. Right now, net of calls, we're running about 22. So very manageable level of leverage.
Yeah, but dude, that supercharges. When interest rates starts coming down, all of a sudden, not only are you getting your preferred stock to go up about 20%, you're also getting the leverage. So you're getting a much higher return. But more importantly, risk-reward. Because you haven't had any defaults, I feel like I'm doing an ad here. I want to see some cash. You have very few or no defaults. You're buying these things at a discount, and they, by definition, have two things going for them. Number one, they almost always go back to the $25 level, because if they stay below like $21 for a while, the company's going to buy them back. Why would they not? So, you know, it's a low risk, high return, and it allows you then to own, you know, a bunch of SMCI and NVIDIA's and so on and so forth that are, you know, going to do that, where this thing just goes brr. The other point is, the other thing I didn't mention is almost all of us, including me, did automatic dividend reinvestment on AMZA. So the shares that we started with, crazy. I mean, and I stopped it at about $20 or $22, the automatic, if I was, you know, 30 and I was saving for a house or a kid's college and so on and so forth, the, you know, power of compound interest, baby, that reinvestment, as long as you're, you know, moving sort of this way, then you're actually hoping for a down day, because when you, you know, when it kicks in, you want to get it lower. But if the trend is going, and that's the thing about bond rates, when bond rates start coming down, the trend of that, of the underlying, is going up. It's not going up like that, but it's stair stepping its way up. And now to get a 25% annualized return from something that the risk on a risk reward is basically, you know, zip, man, you feel a lot better at night. And then when you have really good risk management on the low end, then you can afford to freaking, you know, go a little long on NVIDIA's and so on. All right.
Well, I got to tell you, Jay, he's definitely going to be your spokesperson. So, but before we close out the show, I want to pivot away from this, guys, and go back to what we were talking about in the first block, because one thing that we never did figure out, and I want to hear from you, Jay, what can derail this rally? Because you said there's something coming up later on this fall that could just wipe everything out.
Yeah, so like normally people tend to focus too much on these outlier events. Like they're sort of like, you know, yes, an asteroid could destroy the Earth, but it probably won't. So
who cares?
Yeah. So we're not a big, you know, we're not the type that is coming, oh my God, the Ukraine war and the Middle East. Normally those don't affect the United States that much. But there's one thing that could derail this rally, and that is a Democrat, and I am not more of a moderate, and I don't comment a lot on politics, but the implications of a Democratic sweep would be horrendous, because we already know what they're going to do. So because we had all these House bills proposed last 4 years, and we know corporate taxes are going up to 28 to 30%, probably personal taxes for wealthier people least, and tremendous increases in wealth, in safety net spending. So we know what the policy is, but just focusing on corporate taxes, that's going to hurt economic growth, because corporations are the driver, drive 80, 90% of economic growth. And even more importantly, if we had a 33% increase in the corporate tax rate, that's going to reduce the multiple on the market from 2021, probably down to 18 or 17. So we could take a 20% hit. But the reason that we're bullish, have a 57-50 target with more upside than down, is if you look at the math in the Senate, it's extremely likely to flip Republican. It's mostly Democratic Senate seats up, and most of those states are states that Trump carried. So the chances of losing the Senate are very low. So we think the chances of a Democratic sweep are low, something like 5 or 10%.
So real quick, you said a Democrat-controlled Senate and House and a Democrat in the White House, we're looking at a potential 20% sell-off in the markets. Did I hear you correctly?
Yes, just because most people don't appreciate that corporate taxes drive the multiple, because they drive growth. All of earnings growth comes from reinvestment, and then the growth rate is driven by the after-tax return on capital. So if you lower the after-tax return on capital, which you obviously would if you increase taxes 33%, growth rate goes down, and then, I mean, it's not going to happen instantaneously, but it's going, people are going to realize, oh, well, why aren't you growing so fast? Oh, well, actually, you know, we had less money to invest because we had to pay, you know, 50%, you know, when you go from 20 to 30, paying 50% more corporate taxes. And nobody's going to give, you know, our former president any credit for this. You know, they're going to talk about, oh, all the corporate tax cuts went to buybacks. It's just not true. It increased the growth potential of the U.S. economy. these companies and increased the the fair value multiple on the stock market. And so there was a windfall for stock owners, but we also had higher economic growth. And in fact, I would even cite those low corporate taxes as one reason we've been able to power through this cycle. Fed raised rates 90% of the time we would have recession. We don't even have a recession. It's partly because we have these powerful corporations with competitive corporate tax rates. And that would be an unmitigated disaster if that gets reversed.
Wow. Yeah, and I think that, you know, when you go to the ballot box, people sort of disassociate the ballot box with their stock portfolio, their investment portfolio. But in this case that Jay's talking about, it is highly correlated. We have data going back for 60, 70 years that shows what happens when countries raise rates, particularly what the Dems are talking about. And then, of course, we have this thing where we're going to bring in $7.5 trillion of income, but we're going to spend $9 trillion. So we got to go then borrow some more money. And when we borrow that more money, shockingly, our income the amount of interest we're paying more on that one than we're spending on defense. We're spending more on interest than we are on defense and many parts of the government just to pay the interest. And when you raise the rates of basically inflation, which is also would be as well, because companies are going to have to raise their prices. You know, everything's going to raise their price to because, you know, they're not in the business of throwing money away. Then, oh, my God, now you have an inflation issue that keeps the Fed at rates high. You know, it's a vicious circle. It's a
right.
And that's what I think you're really saying, Jay, is that, you know, this negative feedback economic feedback loop gets kicked off by the tax raises, but it starts to feed into every other economic input. And I'll just finally say, you're so right on the archaic Fed measurement. My favorite one is I finally avoided my entire life to get a phone call from whoever they hire to ask what you could rent your home for, because remember that the 42% of shelter costs. I finally got the phone call, and I'm like, you know, to myself, should I lie?
Yeah.
I mean, am I going to help the cause here, or am I going to hurt the cause? 4,200 phone calls tell us whether your shelter costs the equivalent rent of your home.
Yeah.
Give me a freaking break. There's this thing called the internet. We can get this, you know, simultaneously in real time, you idiots.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I see what you're saying. All right. Go ahead, Jay.
Archaic is not the right word.
Well, I would point out, too, that so they only update it every 6 months. So it's by definition 6 month lag on purpose.
Yeah.
And then the second thing is you probably saw, oh, we had a high PCE print. Well, they changed their methodology. So they included more single family homes in that survey.
Maybe that's why I got the call.
That's what drove up the, so there was no increase in market rates whatsoever, but just, of course, houses rent for more than apartments. That doesn't take a team to figure that out. So they changed that base, happened to be that month, and that's why we printed this high inflation rate. And unfortunately, our Fed, they know this, they're not completely stupid, but they just stick to their methodology. PCE's got to be core, has got to be a 2. But that's why we need the ECB to bail us out and cut first and set the stage for the Fed.
Todd, that's the first time I've ever heard Jay in the 5 years I've known him say that the central bankers are not completely stupid. It's the first time. So that's really a breakthrough for you, Jay.
There you go. Yeah, that is
I go on TV and they don't like that on the broad media. I can tell you that. Absolutely.
But we love it here. That's for
we
sure.
We love it here.
We definitely do. We love it. And this is great, especially now that the show's on Biz Talk Today TV. We're really loving it. So you can say whatever you want, Jay. We love it. But listen, we're going to leave it there because you've said so much. Jay, how can everyone find you and your ETFs?
So you should go to www.infracapfunds.com.
And we have INFRACAP, infracap.com.
Yeah, no more.
That's part of your media training. You know, sometimes yes. Infracap doesn't really know what that means. So, INFRACAP.com.
Right.
Well, I tell you what, we'll also include this in all the descriptions as well as with hyperlinks too. So we encourage the audience to actually read the descriptions and click on those links. You'll be directed right to see what Jay Hatfield has to do with those ETFs. And I'm sure there's also some wonderful commentary on there as well. So listen, we're going to leave it there. Jay, thank you. You said it all today. You were wonderful for the audience. We can't thank you enough. We'd love to have you back again on Buy, Hold, Sell.
Thanks, Todd and Tobin. It was a lot of fun. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Well, on behalf of Jay Hatfield and Tobin Smith, host of the new show Money Mavericks, which is coming out soon on BTT. We'll get into that later on. I am Todd Schoenberger. Thank you once again for joining us. Tomorrow, we have Timothy Kramer. He is the CEO of Scenic Funds out of Houston. He's going to be joining us tomorrow on Buy, Hold, Sell. So until then, take care.
Buy, Hold, Sell, brought to you by CrossCheck Management.
A news story gets shared by a friend on social media, or you catch a tweet that really makes your blood boil. But how do you separate fact from fiction? That's the premise behind Disinformation, a 10-part series from Evergreen Podcasts and Emergent Risk International coming this fall. Tune in to Disinformation wherever you get your podcasts, and remember, don't believe everything you read.